Hey friends, before we dive in, my new book, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is out now, available on intentionalparents.org exclusively, so go check that out. Christmas is coming. What a great Christmas present to get your family praying. And don't miss our upcoming retreats, the Intentional Fatherhood Retreat, February 19 through 21, 2026, in Costa Mesa, California, and the Intentional Motherhood Retreat. We announced this April 23rd through 25th, 2026 in Franklin, Tennessee. Please come out and know that early bird pricing is on both of those events, so check that out. These retreats are spaces to pause, breathe, and invest in your spiritual formation as a parent. So learn more, get your tickets now at intentionalparents.org, and let's get into this week's episode. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast.
That is a good idea.
But I tell you what, any place, the place we need the fruit of the Spirit more than anything else is in marriage.
In marriage, yes. And that's why today we're going to do a Q&R on marriage. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a Q&R. You guys have all sent in questions, and we're going to do our best to answer to our best of abilities through the scriptures and through all that. And so glad you are joining us wherever you're at. Thank you for everybody who has rated and subscribed to the podcast. If you haven't had a chance to do that, if you would just pause for a moment and rate the podcast and even leave a comment, that's so helpful. You can also subscribe. So each week when we release a new episode, we usually release on Wednesdays. We always release on Wednesdays. You can have that episode just come right to the top of your feed and remind you that it's there. And then also just something important to note, if you are enjoying this content, connect with us over social media at intentional_parents is our Instagram handle, and you can find us in other social media platforms, but we would love to connect with you. So if you are finding something helpful or anything like that, please share that. And we'd love to also share that with our audience as well. So today we're going to answer your questions around marriage, as Diane kind of said, where we need help and where we need the fruit of the Spirit most is in the arena of marriage. And all four of us are here today. So I want to start with one that actually, when I read the question, I just read it, it actually kind of made me angry. So I know a couple weeks back we talked about anger, and as a reminder, there is such thing as righteous anger. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually what it kind of brought up in me. So here's the question. This is from a wife, a woman here. So she says, 5 years married, and my spouse doesn't think date nights are necessary while I'm a stay-at-home mom 24/7 with our kids. Mm-hmm. Diane's like almost crying over here. That's a hard one. So where the righteous anger came for me really quick was just the fact like, wow, you don't think those are necessary? Like the disconnectedness, obviously, there's some big disconnection there. I don't know who this person is, and I don't know who her husband is, and I'm going to keep it that way. But I also think as a general topic, that's a big disappointment for your marriage. And that's a hard one. What are your guys' thoughts on this? I know I have some thoughts, but Phil, what are you thinking?
My first thought is that's a wife who doesn't feel cherished. Husband's commanded in Ephesians 5, husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. So we've talked about this before. The husband is to lay down his life for his wife. So there's no, which is not how most men think, myself included. Like, it's all about me, right? Yeah. But we're supposed to lay down our life. But then it goes on and says, you know, how, let me just jump down. Husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. No one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. So this whole thing is a metaphor. Says you know, you nourish your body. Hey, I'm hungry.
Yep.
Like you and I just ate some snacks between podcasts.
Yes, we got hungry all of a sudden. Yes, we did.
Lunchtime, but we can't eat lunch, you know. So, and we take care of ourselves, right? You were running the other morning. You came over up to the house. I'm on a jog. And yeah. I'm going, I'm not going to go on a jog. I'll go to
I wasn't lunch. Trying to flex but, in front of you. I was but, just trying to run shirtless in the middle of winter to show my toughness. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I was not doing
but
that.
But like, you know, we'll let the women speak here, but your wife doesn't just want you to provide.
Yeah.
Say, well, you know, I'm working, you know, and I told you I loved you once. So, you know, just remember that. It was 8 years ago.
Whatever. Yes.
They want to know that they're the most important thing to you after the Lord himself, and that, and they need your affection. So ladies, you can speak to that, but obviously her question is she's not feeling that.
No, and you know,
and that's going to create a cold marriage.
To make a whole question the same, you know, I just noticed the same person asked a question on at a different time, which is, my husband is not emotionally available.
Yeah.
What could help improve his understanding that this is important? So him being emotionally available, or excuse me, unavailable, he's unavailable. She wants him to be emotionally available, and he's not thinking that prioritizing their relationship is important, is right. Essentially what's going on. And so for this wife, whoever you are listening, we want to speak to that for a minute. I think we want to encourage you, but then also hopefully give some perspective that there's some, to me, if I'm being completely honest, it seems like there's something else going on in his mm-hmm. life.
It does.
There's something else going on. Most of the time when there's that much of a disconnect, there's reasons for it. It's not, especially if it was once there. Now, if he was just never emotionally connected, that's one thing that could be, oh, I mean, we're learning so much these days about all the different neurological things that are going on. I've mm-hmm. never met so many adults that are being pseudo-diagnosed with autism or like different mm-hmm. forms of, oh, I didn't even realize this was just thought how I thought I moved through the world. And actually turns out like there's actually some real disability there. So I think that's an interesting thing to note. So was he ever like that before? But if he was once like that, and then now all of a sudden he is not, I think the thing to me would rise to the surface is what else is potentially going on.
Sounds like you need to go talk to somebody if that's the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So we don't know.
We don't know what's, but
what we can do to help anybody who's married, who's listening is ask the ladies here, what makes you feel cherished?
That's good.
Well, that kind of, especially in the early years of raising children, when I was completely immersed in the job, it would have made me feel very cherished to be able to get dressed up and go out to a nice dinner, have somebody actually asking me questions about myself, showing interest in me. You know, at different stages of your life, I think you feel loved from different things.
Yeah.
So like Phil and I did as many date nights as we were actually able to do with young children. But sometimes those involved putting those kids to bed early and making a nice dinner just for the two of us. We didn't always have the resources.
At home dates.
For, you know, at home dates. Or the idea is, this is especially for a stay at home mom, an opportunity for her to remember that she's a woman and not just mom. Not just a servant, mess cleaner, upper, meal maker, you know, transporter from one game to another, but that she is, you love her, her husband loves her and wants to be with her. That's what dating, I mean, dating is not really a biblical concept. The idea here is that you're giving your full attention to your wife and you're reminding her that there's a whole nother life out there.
Yeah.
And you're giving her your approval for what you're doing. You're being lovers.
Yeah.
Which is God's design.
Yes.
I mean, like one day it's going to be just the two of you.
Yeah.
So.
Which is the stage you are in.
You got to fan the flame. So
we're
going to Carmel in a few weeks, you know, and we're
that's
older.
Enough said. I cannot go.
No, I'm not thinking that way. I'm just saying.
But we don't really do date nights anymore because the fact is, by evening,
you guys can have a date night every night.
But we had my parents and her parents available. So there were times when we dropped off the kids and we went out and we picked them up at 9 o'clock and maybe one of them was already asleep and we carried them to the car like you do, you know.
We
but
do that.
We had a lot of nights out in church ministry, but yeah. I remember, you know, we would do stuff and
but I'm thinking
go to Marie Callender's.
That's right.
And you would get high tea class. And cornbread.
Yeah. High class. Well, the one thing that comes to my mind, if you know, I'm thinking of this wife, this woman here who's sitting and asking for help essentially. Mm-hmm. There's one thing I would say that could be very helpful for you. I'm saying this from a man's perspective, but I know that when Elizabeth comes to me with curiosity of what's going on and not accusation, that is always a better posture. Mm-hmm. A curiosity of like, you know, you're seeming off. This is going like you don't seem to want to connect. What, you know, that's, I'm just inserting their story into ours for a minute. But, you know, I think it's that it's a curiosity. Obviously something seems off. Something seems like you're not connected. Mm-hmm. And judgmentalism or accusation always pushes away.
Yeah.
I think most people, but I think men especially, mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm right about it. I think that's,
I'm literally was taking notes of things that were coming to mind. And that was the same thing that was coming up for me of, you know, assuming his goodwill. Like, because mm-hmm. I think that's always a good thing to assume. But, you know, I think a pattern we see in our own marriage, but I feel like I see all over the place, and maybe this is, Mom and Dad, you can speak to if this is a longstanding pattern, I'm guessing it probably is, where so often either spouses, but it usually a lot of times the wife, is frustrated about something in the marriage and has either said things critically or accusingly or in a very like passive, mm-hmm. aggressive sort of way, dropped criticisms, mm. and is deeply frustrated that they're not getting it. And
are you using an example from our life from the other night? Is this what you're?
Oh, I could use lots of examples.
I'm listening to this. I'm like, I'm not particularly good at this.
Unspoken expectations will crush a marriage, and they're like a breeding ground for the enemy. Mm-hmm. Because when we don't speak our expectations, but in our minds, we're just brooding over the fact that our expectations are not being met. Mm-hmm. Then the enemy just comes in with all these lies. Now, maybe the person who asked this question has been very clear with their husband and has been asking and has been arranging the date nights and has, you know, mm-hmm. but more often than not, we want him to initiate it. We want him to ask us to go on a date. We want him to arrange the babysitter.
It feels like you have a lot of experience with this expectation.
Maybe just a little bit.
Listen very carefully now, Brooke.
I'm saying
yes, this comes up for us, but I also think
ask her out.
Yeah.
I also think I hear this from other wives. Yeah. And yet when I ask the question, have you talked to him about it in a calm, non-reactionary, mm-hmm. hey, I love you. I want to connect with you. This is a rough season for me, and I have a deep felt need for this. And it's totally okay if you don't feel the same felt need as strongly as I do. Because that's also, we often have different needs, and we will mm-hmm. judge each other and crucify each other and think that we're supposed to have the exact same desire to go on a date, when the reality is that's probably not going to happen. But if you love each other, once you actually get to that date, you're going to both enjoy mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And so I think there also might be like speaking more to the wife, and obviously we don't know all the history here. I don't know the whole background, but you know, I would encourage you to have a loving, calm, non-accusatory conversation and make sure you express to your husband how helpful this would be to you mm-hmm. and show him a time on the calendar where you feel like it would work mm-hmm. and ask him, hey, can I hire a babysitter and can we do this? Because that'd be really helpful to me. Mm-hmm. And start with one at a time rather than tackling the whole single week. Like plan one.
Yeah.
And see, ask God going into it. God, would you help us connect?
Make the plan not other-centered rather than just what you would want to do.
Yes.
Make it fun for him, basically. Yes. What is something that, because I can also hear a man's going to work every single day. Friday night comes along, traditional date night, Saturday night or whatever. And he just must stay home.
Yeah.
And she's dying to get out.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some making that, way for each other and understanding what's behind it. Does he just really not believe it's necessary? Or is he, you know, voting with his feet and just by the fact that of his negligence of initiating this, you're making a big assumption that he does not he feel this is important. Or is he just not getting to it because he's exhausted in a job he doesn't like?
Exactly. Yeah. I was just going to say that even the, you said the second question seemed
emotionally
the first thing that came to mind is that word, the big word, disassociation. But when we're overwhelmed by something and we just kind of disconnect.
Yeah.
I know that's how I respond when I'm overwhelmed, and I am much less emotionally available to Brooke when I'm really overwhelmed or exhausted or processing. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually the one that doesn't want to go out because I just feel like I've got nothing, you know? You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all around the world that give monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just to a few dollars a month? Thank you so much, and may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. And if you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give.
Can I share just a real time example of how this really actually plays out? Are you okay with this?
Yeah, go for it.
It has to do with us, so I hope you're okay with this.
I feel like our lives are wide open on this podcast.
So, this last weekend was really cool. We had these different prayer sessions for healing stuff for Elizabeth. She's had a lot of chronic illness stuff, and we're going to doctors. We're hitting it with everything. We're going through the spiritual, the physical, the emotional, we're doing all of it because that's clearly what the scriptures say. So we're praying for healing. Well, we had these different prayer times, and the person leading the prayer time was asking that we would, that those who were going to be involved, like if they want to, hey, would you fast and pray for this? So I'm like, obviously, like I'm totally going to be praying for it. But there, I have rhythms built into my life where I fast and pray. And so in my mind, I wasn't like equating this as so much more important than every other time, but I was praying, I was active. But I didn't fast on the day that everyone else was fasting. So Elizabeth came to find this out. And turns out she was not so happy about the fact that I didn't fast while everyone else was supposed to and didn't follow the rules like everyone asked. And I was honestly like confused. I was shocked because I was like, well, first of all, we haven't talked about this. That was the first thing. Second thing was she was like, well, you should know that this is the thing you should do. Like, this is the right thing to do. And, you know, whether it's the right thing to do or not, the point was I didn't do it.
My exact words was, I want you to want to.
Yeah, I want you to want to do it. And I was like, do you have to understand, like, this is one moment out of 100 that I'm fasting and praying for your healing. This one moment to me was, yes, important, but there was other things going on that fasting was going to be challenging for that moment. So anyway, I didn't fast that day, but it turns out she had this very clear expectation that I was unaware of.
That I had not shared with him.
That she had not shared. And we came to find out, like, she was so upset, but I also was like, well, I didn't know that this was that important to you. If I had known, like, that this was to her, for me to do this with everyone at the same time, like that mattered a lot, I would of course been like, okay, yeah, well, no problem. But we hadn't talked about it, hadn't connected. And it took a while for us to actually
let's just be fully honest. We got into a very long argument right before the prayer time.
Oh yeah. We came into the prayer
over time. This very thing.
Yeah. Which, you know, also felt partly energized by the enemy for sure, in the sense of its timing. And we're coming into this prayer time, we're like healing, and Elizabeth, like, she does a better job at, she can do a better job than I can at taking her emotions and going, I can deal with this later. I don't. I've never been good at that. I never grew up with that skill. I also am learning that skill, but it's very hard. So I'm like coming to this prayer time, and good thing is, like, it's all people that are safe, people we know, but they obviously knew, like, oh, he's probably not very happy. Like there's something off. And then you know, we're praying through stuff. And and the prayer time was incredibly fruitful, incredibly helpful. And we ended up working through it all. But all to say, like, I know for us, that's a one example of many times
unclarified expectations.
When there's something built, and it can happen both ways, but I think often, not often, it goes both ways, but there's those times.
But it's usually me. It's usually I have the expectation that, and I just want you to somehow magically know it and I'll feel loved by that.
Yeah.
And we're learning 16 years into marriage that how destructive that is. And yeah. What you said to me in that argument that really stuck with me, you said, yes. If you had any idea how bad I actually do want to please you and make you happy.
Yeah.
And I think that was eye-opening to me because I don't really always like view it that way. And it was just helpful for me to see how often I do this in other areas. And it was a really helpful argument because then a couple of days later, there was something I was like, oh, realizing I have an expectation that our family's going to do a certain thing, but we haven't actually talked about it. And I assume we're on the same page.
But are we?
But yeah. We need to actually talk about it. But that
actually was helpful.
I know we're on the same page.
And then we didn't get an argument about it. I was able to say like, no, this is exactly how we actually are way more on the same page than you would think. And it's usually those assumptions, like she assumed based upon my personality and more immature version of myself, this is how I was going to respond to this particular topic. But come to find out, like, no, I'm actually thinking very differently. Anyway, all to say, we deal with this stuff all the time. Yeah. How about you guys ever deal with this stuff?
Absolutely.
Have to share any vulnerable stories, but the point being, like, you guys experience this too.
I think in addition to an unspoken expectation is if that unspoken expectation comes to a conclusion that is so negative and judgmental of the other person, you know, so there comes down to believing the best of each other.
Right.
Yes.
Love believes the best of each other. And I think that's hard to do. I think it's harder the longer you're married. It's actually in some ways harder because you have experience with each other's failures and flaws and hurts. But to keep that fresh, you know, the fresh forgiveness of those small things in each other's lives, like the times when you didn't mention that you were going to fast on the day that a bunch of people were fasting and praying. And then she felt less loved because she reacted in a, I don't feel loved
way. You say obviously, like, of course that's the right thing.
Yeah, I do because, I mean, obviously my first thought was, choosing to fast on that day, it could have broadcast to her that you didn't really care about this thing that is dominating her entire life.
Of course. And I see that. I totally see that.
But so, I mean, I think these are just cycles we all get on. And by just making you aware of them, I think, and where that we also struggle with these things, keeps us maybe from getting all self-righteous and judgmental towards each other on things. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Phil, you're flipping around in the scripture.
No, I mean, I always end up in, you know, 1 Corinthians 13.
Yeah,
it's such a great passage.
Because that's God's description of agape love, the way he loves us. And obviously, if you want to have a healthy marriage, the closer you can live out 1 Corinthians 13, which, by the way, these are all verbs. When it says love is patient, love is kind, in Greek they're verbs. Love is being patient. Mm. Love is being kind. But then it, you know, what Diane just said is it bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things, and it doesn't seek its own. It's described here, the kind of love that God has for us, but it does not take into account a wrong suffered. In other words, I'm not going to hold this against you. It's overlooking a fault, choosing to believe the best. You know, we used to say, I've got you covered. Like, you know, I just said something rude to Diane and maybe she needs to call me out on it. And if she does it humbly and nicely, it's easier for me to receive. But maybe there's times when she's just saying, you know what, he's hungry or he's sick. He's just being a jerk, whatever. But I know he loves me, so I'm going to overlook this one. You know, and then it becomes a pattern. That's another thing. But I mean, I think you have to believe, the Bible talks about believing the best about somebody instead of the worst.
Yes.
You know, not defining someone by their 10 worst moments.
Yes.
you know, yes, and then so dredging good. Up. Do you remember when you?
Yes.
Yeah. And we all yes. do it and it's yes. not helpful.
Yep.
You know, whereas I think, look at all the stuff that we do and God just forgives. He doesn't call us on every single, we're not that's exactly walking around all day long. I wonder if that word just displeased him and he might smash me on that one, you know, but he does shape us and call us to a higher,
I was just
level.
Thinking about how God does that with us. How he's not like going, do you remember that thing you did 5 years ago and the thing you said, you know, what a gift. And we can give that gift to our spouse.
It's covered by the blood of Christ and we can give that gift to our spouse. So no. And, but I just think Diane and I have been married 44 years. So maybe this can be encouraging. We don't do it perfectly.
No.
This is a life journey because God is determined to shape us into the image of his son. That's Romans 8:29.
Yep.
That's what he's doing. He's using all kinds of things to do it. Trials, suffering, praise, you know, success is a test.
Yeah.
That's if a it good fills reminder. Your money's a test, like that's how you reminder. Handle it. So it's like not a test, like I'm going to see if you pass the test. It's because he's for you and he wants you to succeed in every way. So he uses all these crucibles, you know, your boss that you don't like, whatever. But I like to say marriage and children are the two things God uses more than anything to mold you into the image of his son, because there has to be a death involved.
Yes.
And, you know, Jesus said, unless a seed falls into the earth and dies, it won't bear fruit. But when it falls in the earth and dies, it bears much fruit. So from death comes life. You know, if anyone wants to come after me, follow me, let him take up his cross, deny himself. If anyone wants to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross and follow me. So he's going to use, so marriage, we're talking about marriage today, is the crucible of all crucibles. Ugh. Because you're living together, rubbing against each other, and it's tense. It's like, and
you did it again
for good or bad. Like if I'm having some bad moments, the first person that knows it is my wife.
Absolutely, and without you even having to say anything, without you having to even articulate it.
What do you think about what I just said?
Well, of course, I mean, you're quoting scripture. It's all true. And yet, at the same time, there is a time to overlook a matter for sure, and there's a time to bring something up, and for the other person to have a humble enough heart that they also want to make things right, you know, instead of always be right.
They want to love. That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
So I think there's that too. It's really both in. It is a dance. It's in marriage. We have to be bringing things up to each other, because if we stuff it, then it comes out in a volcanic explosion somewhere down the road.
Yeah.
And maybe that your spouse was clueless that they were doing this or saying this particular thing, and it was hurting you every single time. So it's, yes, we speak up with kindness. And I think that's what 1 Peter 3 says, which is also talking about husbands and wives and roles. And then in starting in verse 8, finally, all of you should be of one mind, you know, so it's not me and you, full of sympathy toward each other, loving one another with tender hearts and humble minds. I think both of those. Don't repay evil for evil, or, you know, somebody says a nasty word to you. You don't just react, get nasty in return. Don't retaliate when people say unkind things about you, like just jump all over them. Instead, pay them back with a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
That is what God says wants you to do, and he will bless you for it.
Mm-hmm.
So when we respond with a blessing, and then it goes on further in verse 11, turn away from evil and do good. Work hard at living at peace with others.
Yes. Wait, will you quote verse 10? What version are you reading? New Living?
I'm in the New Living.
Can you read verse 10? It's quoting Psalm 34, but I love it. Like New American Standard says, let him who means to love life and see good days. Everybody wants it. I want to love life.
And
what's
I want to see good days.
In the NLT?
If you want a happy life and good days, keep your tongue from speaking evil.
There you go.
And keep your lips from telling lies.
That's good. And that
lies, I think, can also happen in marriage where you twist somebody's actions and you make a conclusion or an accusation that is a lie, really.
Yeah.
Like, and it could be, I don't know, maybe this husband has really come out and said, I just don't think date nights are necessary at all. We're not going to do date nights. Maybe he said that. Maybe he has just been apathetic about it. Doesn't have a burning desire for it. Money's tight. He's exhausted. And you're believing a lie about him, coming to the conclusion that he really doesn't think it's important because he's voting with his feet.
Yeah.
I think that's where we have to be careful. We don't say, okay, your husband just did or did not do this, and therefore we jump to this huge conclusion. So we should just be careful.
I agree. And if there's something that as the wives that are listening right now, if I could just give you an insight to your husband as a man, like Elizabeth said, you have no idea how badly we often want to please you and how much we often don't know how to. And it is so helpful when you give us an insight of how to help you and not in a way, because there is a lot of desire there, but there's a lot of between upbringing, understanding, emotional awareness and intelligence. Like we miss stuff. Like
hints are not helpful.
Yeah. Hints are not helpful. There you go. Women are so highly intelligent. Like when we put out an opportunity to ask questions, the majority of people asking questions are women. Why is that? Because women care so much in the best way. They're the ones taking initiative on this because they're going like, man, I really want to know this. And that's such a beautiful gift. But also remember that, you know, we need help in that arena. You are often emotionally more aware of certain things, not all the time, but there's a lot of instances where you're aware of certain dynamics or things that we're not fully aware of. And so be gracious in that process.
You know, I'm thinking of, you know, our friend Emerson Eggerich.
Yeah. He's great.
Who's, you know, knows a lot about marriage. Remember, the husband and wife are one. Mm. It's a covenant before God and a commitment between the two of you, but you mystically become one. So I can't remember. He does a brilliant job of explaining this, but he says the wife is saying, I have a need that only you can meet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that if she says in whatever, don't use those words, but if she's communicating, you know, I need, and women always want deeper. Yeah. They're more relational.
Yes.
They're nurturers. God made them that way. That's why women are asking most of these questions, because, you know, they're beautifully created by God to have deep relationships with their husband and with their kids. So anyway, I'm just saying, as husbands need to realize that our wives are wired by God for us to meet some needs in them, even though only ultimately God himself can meet their deepest needs. My responsibility is to be available and, you know, humble.
Yes.
And sacrificial. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get it every time. I'm going to miss the mark.
Yes.
Ask Diane. but that's what she's longing for, right, babe? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
absolutely.
Because it's a unique relationship between husband and wife.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to actually be a picture to the world of relationship between Christ and his church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's actually created by God to be a testimony.
Yeah.
And so of course it's going to.
But I think there's a lot of men out there that are still boys. And I don't mean that as a rude thing. I mean, like, they haven't had the chance to develop.
I was thinking, we just don't know. Maybe the guy's coming home like, I want to play video games tonight. Yeah. I don't want to go out with you.
Exactly.
You know, it could be that.
Yeah.
Or it could be that
there's
a wife is kind of nagging him. And he's like, I don't want to go out with you because you're just going to criticize me.
Of course. And we can't get into their dynamic. But
no, we don't know their dynamic. But, but we do know that. It's God's, read Song of Solomon. It's God's heart that they have this romantic, beautiful relationship so that when they wake up one day and the kids are gone and they don't do what we see many people our age doing, divorcing.
But this is where so many people, I think it's easy to forget that we're in this really unique time, especially with men, where they're growing up later. And I feel women in general have grown up earlier mentally, emotionally. There's all this study around it. And I find Elizabeth is far more mature in certain areas or aware of certain things quicker than I am a lot of times. And so that takes time to catch up. Sometimes you have the blessed gift of being on the same page with the same maturity level and both of you seeing the same thing at the same time. But oftentimes in our experience, whether it's the wife or the husband, there's usually someone that's maybe not right there. And that's one of the things that attracted you to them, to that person. So I think it's that reminder that be patient in the process. Like, I can't remember who it was, but there was a story that it comes to mind. And I think of it as myself with you a lot of the time. Like this old couple was sitting down with this girl. She was maybe like in her late 20s. And I'm butchering the story, and I'm probably sharing like three versions of a story. But the point is, the thought really, I don't even know exactly where it all came from, because I read various
but
things.
But it's a good story.
It's a great story. So let me get to the point. The point is, they're sitting down, they're talking, this older couple, maybe in their mid 50s, talking to this girl who's in her mid 20s. And the husband goes and leaves. He goes to the restroom. They're sitting at dinner or something like that. And the girl says to the wife, the one in her mid 50s, like, oh my gosh, he's amazing. What an incredible man. I want to marry somebody like that someday. Mm-hmm. And she basically, and the woman just kind of smiles. She's like, yes, it has taken a very long time and a lot of energy on my part to help him become that man.
That's good.
It's good, but it's also so true.
It is like, true.
The version of who I am and going to continue to be, hopefully will be better, to the point where like one day that could be said mm-hmm. of me, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But I also know that that would not be like all the years of insanity that it feels like in the process of becoming that human.
Yeah.
You know, there is so much hope for your husband, but at the same time, it is not like this linear, beautiful road. You don't marry this perfect person. Oftentimes, they're not even aware of half that stuff until they're even older anyway. Mm-hmm. So I guess all to say, be patient.
I was going to say that seems to be the main word here mm-hmm. is be patient.
Yeah.
You know, exercise mm-hmm. the loving kindness that God does towards us.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you stuff it. It means you be patient. You be kind. You make it as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. For somebody who's not emotionally available, you maybe start to pray and help to dig deep as to why.
Yeah.
What is the disconnect? It's mm-hmm. probably not a superficial reason. It's probably goes back a ways. And you know, if you can look at your husband, your wife, and you say, this is for life.
Yeah.
My entire life, I will be married to this person.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of does give you just more of an ability to work hard at living in peace with others.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, mm-hmm. like do yeah. all that you can to be living at peace.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Treat each other with kindness, right?
Yeah.
Like I just thought of Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger.
Yeah.
The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable. There's an issue here. She wants to be dated.
Yes.
And if she can, as much as possible, communicate that in a gentle way, mm-hmm. It will be more acceptable to him.
Mm-hmm. So that is a great, great reminder and a great way to wrap up that question, because we have like a lot more, but if you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers. Mm-hmm. The next question, which is in regards to marriage, but also around parenting, how to get through the little stage together as a team. Mm-hmm. So maybe let's just spend a couple minutes on this, but some of the stuff that we've experienced, how to get through the little stage together as a team. All I'll say is with our youngest one being almost 5, the little years are really hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, like it's still hard now in a different way, but the little years were really particularly weighty for us.
Demanding.
Demanding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, you have to be a team. But do you have any thoughts, Elizabeth or Diane or Phil on that?
My first thought is a lot of what we already said applies specifically to this question.
Yeah.
And I love how it's phrased, how do we get through it together as a team? Because I think that's sometimes the hardest part is, you know, you don't know the different views you have on how certain parental things should be handled until you start having kids. You have a lot of ideas of how you think you're on the same page. And doing it together as trying to do it together as a team, I think is really important.
I do too.
And I think most of that is done through talking, which is the most difficult to do when you have little kids. But through being able to, when you see, and usually it's the wife who sees, oh, I'm not, we're not totally on the same team. We're not handling these same things. These certain behaviors in the same way, we need to talk about that. I think the wife can play a really crucial role if, and I was thinking when we were answering the last question, you know, Mom, you talk a lot about, and we're going to unpack it a ton more in the future, but the woman's role of being an easer, and we've explained it multiple times. Maybe we can link a few episodes where we've talked about it, but where this beautiful picture of the woman being a fellow warrior who comes to fight back to back in battle with her husband, and how God created it to be that way. And yet so often the enemy perverts that and it becomes we as women coming in to try to help our husbands, but we do it critically. We do it by shaming them, by telling them all the ways they're handling things wrong. And really the heart behind it is still pure and it's still God's heart for us to help them because we see things they don't. And yet the enemy just totally perverts it because what warrior who's in the middle of battle wouldn't want somebody to come in and fight back to back to them? They'd be like so relieved. But yet our help can be perceived as judgment because often we do it poorly or our husbands are prideful or whatever. Like the enemy gets in and sin perverts it. But even thinking, I think this is a job really that I think the wife sees more often. When you see you're getting off, when you see we're not doing this as a team. I think you can be the one to initiate the conversation and say, hey, I want so badly for us to be on the same page. I'm feeling a little bit like in certain areas we're not. Can we talk through these things? And not demanding we're going to talk about it right now. We're going to get on, because usually it's we want them to do things our way or we want, you know.
You get on my page.
Yes, exactly.
I've never experienced this. Tell me more.
No, never, never.
Tell me more.
Speaking from experience here. But yeah, I think just, I mean, more than anything, even what Brooke said, like it's, that would be my parents' dog.
he looked like he was dreaming. He's sleeping under our house. He's dreaming and he was growling in his sleep. And then he sat up and barked.
I think that's exactly what happened. Elizabeth.
That's funny.
I love that you're taking this, what we've talked about, the woman's, the wife as an easer, the back-to-back warrior.
Yeah.
And it just kind of went in my mind when you were saying that. This is for me personally. Sometimes when I've worked up the whatever it is, the moxie to correct or to suggest, instead of a back-to-back, I'm using a frontal assault.
Yes.
You know, I'm going at him and his reaction is predictable, completely predictable, defensive.
Yeah.
And, you know, but yet as his easer, I'm supposed to be having his back on a defensive position. So I think what you're saying is really important.
It's very important.
Being able to say, maybe even not, I see that we're not on the same page. Maybe just address the exact scenario. Yeah. I'm noticing then when so-and-so gets up from bed after we've said no, this is the way you're handling it. I'm noticing that I'm handling it a different way. Can we kind of come together and figure out what's working?
This happened to us the other night.
Explain.
Our daughter Birdie really struggles with food. She has a bunch of sensory stuff, and then the way her mouth formed makes it really difficult for her to chew. So we've done tons of feeding therapy, gained a ton of ground, but we're in a regression right now, and she's really struggling with dinners. Basically, whatever I make for dinner, she does not want. And I'm noticing we're veering to not be totally, we're not approaching it the same because he's exhausted and doesn't want the conflict at dinner. Yeah.
No way.
And I'm idealistic and I'm like, I know the only way to get her to progress is if we hold certain lines with her. Mm-hmm. And we've had a lot of like professional help with this. So I'm noticing it more and more. I'm getting more and more frustrated, but my frustration's coming up at the dinner table, mm-hmm. not a time we can really talk about it. And so I just said to him, it came like there was, she was asking for something and it came to my mind. We weren't at the dinner table. And I just said to him, oh, remind me, we've got to talk about this because I feel like we've got to get on the same page if we're going to be able to gain some ground. Uh-huh. And we still haven't had the conversation, but I think those are important moments too when you just are like, oh, hey, I'm noticing this thing. Can we carve out a time that we talk about it?
Yeah. Come up with a strategy together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to what Brooke said, it's hard. Those are years that it's sometimes the hardest. And yet now we're seeing with having older kids that fighting for that when your kids are little will really, really serve you for when they get older so that you're not having to figure out maybe you're, 8 years into parenting and parenting is shifting. You don't have littles anymore, but it's been so long that you've been able to figure out how to communicate about it.
Yeah.
And then you have a pre-adolescent or adolescent and you're like trying to figure out how to get on the same page. Right. It's so worth.
Yikes.
The little years are so hard, like so hard for me personally, and they're worth their weight in gold.
Yeah.
They're so, you can see that God had a beautiful purpose in them being so hard.
So what I want to do with this last part of today, because seriously, we could take one of these questions and go crazy because I think we all feel this is like so, such a felt experience for us too. Like we're in this too. But what I'd love to do is give like 3 or 4 questions, but what we'll do is like a little bit of rapid fire. So we'll just do like, here's a thought on, I'll ask a question. We'll do like a thought. So we're going to all have to use self-control to not, myself included,
short answers.
To not expand too much. I know this is hard for us because this is it's a long form podcast, so that's okay. But I'd love to try to get just through a couple of these because I think there's some wisdom here and there's some great questions. So here's one real quick. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How to encourage a spouse to dig deeper in their faith and to join you in their walk. Mm-hmm. How do you encourage your spouse to dig deeper in their faith, but to join you in their walk? Do you have something, Elizabeth?
I'm thinking of a scripture that I don't know where it is, or even I couldn't quote it to you, but you're going to know what I'm talking about. There's a scripture that's talking about showing people the way of Jesus, basically. And the end of it says something like, or no, it's about a wife. And the end of it says, and with basically showing them without words.
First Peter 3. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I knew you would know what I'm talking about.
Mom
okay, can you turn
it
to it and read it?
Yeah,
because
I'll read
I think
it.
She's constantly using it for Phil.
Think about, we talk all the time about modeling. How do we teach our kids? So often it's by modeling things to them. It's modeling our own faith to them.
And you want to read it, babe?
I'm going to read it in the New Living
that's
like
probably a little softer.
This will be good. And this will be
how we avoid the word submissive.
Yeah. That's good.
Okay.
The big trigger word.
Where I'm going to pick it up partway through verse 1, just because it's specific to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Your godly lives will speak to them, your spouse.
Yes.
Better than any words.
Yes.
They will be won over. I love that
right
there.
That
won over. Are we winsome? That's that word, old-fashioned word of a winsome person.
Yeah.
They're talking about being a winsome person to win them over by the watching your pure godly behavior. So I think spiritual influence with an adult husband or wife is usually without words or with really winsome words.
Yeah.
Treating that person as if, like, for instance, if this is your husband and he's not getting up and in the word in the morning, instead of shaming him because you listen to this podcast and they tell you you should be up every morning reading him, it's maybe sharing with him something from the word. Before you go to work, I just read this morning. I thought you would just love it. So you're assuming this is a man or a woman with spiritual capacity and desires that are maybe a little bit dormant right now because the worries of the world have just choked out so much of the riches of that. So you're doing it in an assumption that I think you'll love this verse. Can I just read it to you before we go?
Yeah.
That's good. And just, you know, they're all of us go through periods of time where we're just dull-hearted spiritually, mm-hmm. where, you know, that's where I think that the spiritual disciplines or the spiritual practices come in, so valuable.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. if that isn't a part of your spouse's life, just being able to spill over some of the riches that you mm-hmm. are getting, mm-hmm. insights. Maybe your husband isn't going to church anymore, but you come home and you're enthusiastic about something that the message was. And this definitely goes by husbands and wives.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth, you look like you have something.
I think she's
just underlining that passage.
That was great.
And reading it.
Yeah. Great teamwork. That was a great response. And good job. Next one. How do you convince your spouse? Convince. This is great. You don't. How do you convince your spouse to get on a family budget without seeming critical? That's a great one. Everyone values money. My first thought to that is, it's not about budgeting, is about stewardship. So mm-hmm. you feel like you have more now without making it too moral. Cause some people are like, it's, you know, being moral, but the truth is you have resources to steward. They're not yours. They're yours to use, to bless, to help, lead your family. And I think the best way to do it is to paint a compelling picture why a budget is important and why budgets matter. I know that we've talked about before talking about budgets, but I know we have been on a budget for 10, 12, I mean, almost our whole marriage. Our whole marriage. Yeah. We've been on a budget our whole marriage, but we've been like actively budgeting for our whole marriage. And it's amazing what you can do when you actually budget your money. You mm-hmm. feel like you have more than you do because mm-hmm. you know where it goes mm-hmm. and you can say yes and you can say no. Mm-hmm. But you know, stewardship is and a really important thing. And I think sometimes if you're just saying, I want to get on, if I just want to get on, you know, a budget for budget's sake, that's one thing. But I actually think that there's much more compelling vision you can give of stewardship to your family, stewardship of money, resources, time. So that's just my thought. Anything else?
Well, I just think one even way to, you know, just an idea of how to approach it would, you know, because it sounds like whoever's asking this question would like to, but the spouse it doesn't see the value of just being able to say, hey, if I set up the budget and we have a meeting and agree upon it together, could we try it for a couple months and see how it goes? Because I think
that's a good way to go.
That is, you know, I know of people who go in and out of seasons of budgeting, but most people who have been doing it faithfully, like, will swear by it and say, yes, we totally do. And also, if you need any help, we use an app called You Need a Budget, YNAB.
YNAB, use that.
We love it. There's a bunch out there, but that's our favorite.
There's a lot of great resources. That's one we use, but there's a lot of good ones. Mm-hmm. So Phil and Diane, anything about that?
Just what you said, it's about stewardship. Money is spiritual.
Yes.
And, you know, that's the deeper question I think every person has to ask themselves. Is this my money or is it God's blessed me with these resources to steward? And I think if you see it that way, then, and you're married, you know, I think one of the worst things you could do is, this is your money, this is my money.
Yeah.
It's our money.
Yes.
And we're one. And this is, you know, how God's providing for us, what we're going to do with it. I think you start with the big question. And then usually in a marriage, yeah, one's more of a saver, one's more of a spender.
Yep.
So
yep.
You can work that out. And if you can't figure it out on your own, get some help.
Here's a different, well, so on the money note, and it's a kind of a related question. We know the person that asked this question. And she said, kind of marriage related, but should you tithe if you work in ministry? Ooh. And I would say... I know what your response is, Phil, but I also think
I just think that's a really good question.
I never thought about that either. But that, I don't think you tithing is connected to you being in ministry or not being in ministry. That's what I'll say. I think that tithing is connected to stewardship of Jesus. The three things that marked a Jesus follower in the early days were fasting, praying, and generosity. It was assumed within your Christian faith that you would have all three of these things, that you would have prayer regularly, fasting regularly, and that you would have generosity and you would be giving, you know, you'd be giving a lot. So those are the answer is yes.
I just say there in Old Testament, it says the Levites who received the tithes of God's people also
gave
tithe.
There you go.
They tithe the tithe. So it's literally in the Bible.
It's literally biblical. So,
and I think all four of us could tell story after story of how, you know, because I look back at seasons when we were new to ministry, young, having our first couple kids. And I'm like, how in the world did we ever make ends meet? How did I stay home with our kids? And I think we saw the faithfulness and provision of God over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
And how God really does, like, he really does honor that.
Can I just share? I mean, stories fuel our faith, don't they? Like, yeah. They always do for me. So if you're a person that happens, this summer we were at this camp. We were doing this camp, and they have all these different, like, little prayer spots and chapels. And it was before dinner or something like that. I had like a half hour and I just wanted to check out this chapel. So I like hike up to this spot, and it's this designated prayer chapel in the woods. And so I just went there to just be alone with God. It was so sweet. And it's just such a cool environment. So I'm there and I'm just praying, because that was just something that I knew my soul needed. And I remember, it was the only thing I remember praying. I was just like, and I don't even remember why, but it was like, God, I just pray for like laugh out loud provision when it comes to different things of our life. And whether it be finances or relationships or, you know, just all of it. And so in this particular place, my phone didn't have service. You would only have service if you were like in certain parts of this camp. And so I think I go back to take a shower before dinner, because we were all out, you know, swimming all afternoon. And I'm getting ready to leave and go to dinner, and my phone dings, and it made a different noise than it normally did. I was like, these are none of my alerts. What is this noise? And I go to look, and it was this weird number. And a while back, we had a GoFundMe for Duke with some of the health stuff that he had, and some person who I have no idea who they are, I couldn't even figure out who this person was, just decided, and this was like right at the time when the money that we had for his care was almost out. And there was still some more needed there. And all of a sudden it dings, and someone gave $2,800 to this medical care,
which we're still using today.
Which I'm like, it was laugh out loud provision. Yes. It was so connected.
I think you called me laughing, and I did. Started laughing. I was like, are you serious?
I was like, I have no idea. So then I started asking, like, who is this person? We have to figure out who this is. I want to thank them. This is like, and share this story. This is so cool. And it was just like, it was comical. I still don't even know who this person is. It was comical how God blessed. And that wasn't just because we like did something so godly or whatever, but I think there is a stewardship issue, and God just wants to, like, I think God really does love blessing us in surprising ways.
But you're tithing, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. See, Diane and I have been talking about this a lot, because we were like, our generation was taught to tithe.
I know.
Yeah. And then after a while, some preachers started saying, well, tithing's Old Testament and the New Testament doesn't exactly say generosity. Yeah. And, important. You know, it is a little confusing, because the Israelite economy, you know, was a theocracy. And so there was the taxes involved. But, you know, this isn't about tithing. Yes. But basically, I like what Randy Alcorn says, tithing is the training wheels of giving. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's, and you can't outgive the Lord, you know. Mm. One of our friends who's with the Lord now said, God has a bigger shovel. So it's like, you know, you give and he gives more. And mm-hmm. we look back like, how did we ever do that? How did how did we put braces on our kids? Like,
I know,
you know, and so people say, I can't afford to tithe. And I'd say, you can't afford not to tithe.
Yeah. Yes.
Because you're trusting God. It's a step of faith. You're saying, God, I'm going to put you first.
Yeah.
And I'm going to honor you for what you've given and trust, and he can make the 90%. It doesn't mean that that's all you should give. It's just, I'm just saying he will care
and
for
his
people.
I understand the question in ministry context, because you feel like, you know, depending upon your ministry situation, sometimes ministries have a poverty mindset. And I think you shouldn't be overpaid, but you also shouldn't be underpaid. I think there's a huge balance in ministry. But that said, I know the temptation when you're making little to not give, because you're thinking every single
ounce. And
you're
giving your whole life.
Yeah, every single ounce is something that we need. And I would say that's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Just in our experience, I'll just say from our experience, it was an opportunity for us to exercise faith, and God always blew our minds. And I would say it's not always in an upped paycheck. It was always in the random person that was like, here, can we give you this? I cannot tell you how many friends or people that we had that were like, oh, we see how busy your life is. do you want to go on vacation for a week in Hawaii? And we're like, what are you talking about?
That's we could never afford you guys.
It's happened to us. It's happened to us three times.
Multiple times. Yeah. Goodness. And different situations. But all I'm trying
those
God
are
always does that
to,
stuff. At least
to
in
add
our
this
life.
Even into parenting. Those are the moments that you tell your kids about. Your kids should know that you're tithing.
Yeah.
And know what the scriptures say about it. And know that you're trusting God with this part of That's your right. income. And then tell them the stories when things happen, when the random things
stuff
happen.
Comes in.
Bring them into it. Say, look what God did. Like this was totally God's provision.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because that's what they're going to build their life off. Yeah. Like, why have we never questioned tithing? Like, I grew up, you would give us our tiny little allowance.
Yeah.
And we would put our tithe in it. You made us. You know what I mean?
Oh, but we make our kids
made, but they didn't know they were being made.
No, you
they
didn't
thought.
Even know. We
no,
made it fun.
You made it habit training.
You were really inviting all of us. And I think maybe that's a better word.
Yeah.
But
go
it's
ahead.
Much easier when it's been a part of your life since you were getting an allowance when you and you were tithing 10 cents of
it's
your
not
dollar.
Surprising.
You know?
It's not surprising.
It's such a rhythm and part of, you know, I remember when I got my first job, that was like, okay, I would never look at the whole paycheck because you always like, and of course it probably started more legalistic for me. But then when you start to accumulate the stories, it becomes much more of like overflow of your heart. Yep.
Here's the
thing.
I also think it helps tithing because it is a very clear offering to God. You're saying we're offering you the first fruits. First check we write of the month is our tithe check. It puts husband and wife on the same page just on everything. So you're going to be on the same page with the budget. You're going to make your way to the same page on the budget because of the fact that the first 10%, that's a lot, of your income is going to God and his kingdom and his work. So
and
I think that right there settles
important.
A bunch of these problems.
Yeah, and I think it's important to just, you know, if anybody's sitting here getting up in arms, like legalistic 10%, all this stuff. Like, listen, this is not legalism. This is invitation.
Yeah.
Like, just try God at this. Like, no joke. If you are a skeptical person, then give 3%. Like, try. It doesn't matter. Just, it does matter eventually when it comes to your heart because it's actually connected to the money is a root of all kinds of evil.
Yeah.
And this is an opportunity for you to actually trust God with the things of life and to stop trying to be the person that is making your own future and so connected to money. And this is a part of that. That's why God so clearly called us to generosity, not Elizabeth and I, the church, the people of God, because he knows how quickly it can get into your heart and destroy you. And so it's a practice every single month to go, am I going to trust God with this amount of money that I could save? And we have never, ever, and I would wonder if you guys have, we have never once regretted it. We've never once been like, we shouldn't do this. We've never once said, this is a bad practice. If anything, it has been the opposite. It reminds me of Proverbs that the way of the godly winds upwards. You know, there's like when you walk in God's ways, it does not lack God's reward. And the truth is many people are addicted to money. And this is your opportunity, your invitation to begin to separate yourself from money and give it to God and let trust him with it.
I would agree.
Yeah, you know, it's a one thing where God actually invites us to test him.
Oh, that's true.
In Malachi 3.
Yes.
Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse so that there may be food in my house. This is God speaking. And test me now in this, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you a blessing until there is no more need.
Yes.
And I will rebuke the devourer for you. So we don't know how many times God, I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe he fixed your car with an angel. I don't know. He rebukes the devourer because there's a whole, we could talk about this for a long time. But Diana's right. Like if you are together saying we're going to give God the first fruits, well, then automatically the two of you now are working on a budget because you're saying we're going to put God first.
Yes.
And I just, you know, if sometimes people, you know, you're newly married, you know, you're barely making rent and you think I can't afford to tithe. One day when we make more money, we'll tithe. And what I've so seen is it doesn't work that way.
No.
If you're making $200 and you can't give $20,
so
you think when you're making $200,000, you're going to give $20,000. It doesn't work that way.
No.
You start, he was faithful little, I will make faithful over much. And test me now in this, God says, watch what I do for you.
Yes.
And he will.
Mm-hmm. And so today, the encouragement is stay faithful, stay married, stay patient. I think there's been a lot of different scriptures we have tossed around. And wherever you're at in your journey of marriage, just have hope that God can come in and help and continue to work on you and continue to bless you. And so thank you for all your questions, everybody who sent them in. And please keep sending in your questions. You know, this is something that is an ongoing process. As you said, Phil, this is a lifelong commitment. It's a lifelong process and it's never done. Right?
I don't remember saying that, but if I did, I agree with what you just said. Yes.
Well, I'm just repeating. I often have to quote you to you on this space. Yes, you did say that. You said it earlier in this episode, okay. And that's true because it's a lifelong thing. And so wherever you're at in that journey, we just hope God blesses you and joins you this week. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.